This episode of Fermented Adventure the Podcast welcomes back Tom and Kim Bard of the Bard Distillery. We catch up on what's been happening over the last year, their experience at Bar Convent, and what you can expect from this amazing distillery in the future. Be sure to reach out to Kim and Tom of the Bard Distillery and let them know what you thought about the podcast. Cheers! Ladies and gentlemen, craft spirit enthusiasts, and those interested in the intoxicating world of craft distilleries, cideries, meaderies, wineries, and the occasional foray into breweries. It's Rich Shane, and welcome to Fermented Adventure, the podcast, where we bring you the fascinating people that are making the mash, fermenting, distilling, bottling, pouring, and delivering to you some of the finest libations in the world. Before we get started, here are a few housekeeping items. Thank you for bringing the podcast into wherever you are and whatever you're doing. We truly are grateful that you have chosen to listen and make us part of your day. It would mean the world to us if you left a 5-star review. This helps us climb in the rankings and it makes it easier for others to find us. Don't hesitate to leave us your comments as well. If the podcast didn't meet your expectations, tell us why. We're always striving to improve. You can find us at fermentedadventure.com. We are on Instagram and Facebook as Fermented Adventure. Email us at fermentedadventure@gmail.com. All right, FA Nation, let's meet our guests. She's Kim Bard. He's Tom Bard. I'm Rich Shane, and this is Fermented Adventure, the podcast. Tom and Kim, welcome back to the podcast.
Good to be back. Thank you.
Good to be back. Thanks for asking us.
Well, who wouldn't ask the royalty of Kentucky to be back on the podcast?
Here we go.
We bumped into each other. We didn't know we were going to be at Bar Convent Brooklyn. What a surprise. What an experience. What was Bar Convent like for the both of you?
Wow, that was our first experience, Rich. And when I bumped into you, it was like, you know, you see someone, you're like, wait a minute, double take. I know you, because there were so many faces there we'd never seen before because we hadn't been to that venue. And we're in the New York market, but not really. So, a lot of new faces, a lot of new people. So it was really cool.
Yeah, it was great. We try as every year goes by, we try to do more and more of these events just to get, you know, our networking out there, get in front of people's faces, let them know we exist. And, that was a really cool, not only the spot there at, Industry City, but, just being in New York, period. It's a totally different vibe. It was a lot of fun.
A lot different from Western Kentucky.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Talk about some of the interactions you had or just some of the responses from people trying your whiskey for the first time.
We got very good feedback. Everyone liked it. A lot of people, what you always like when you go to these things and you're set up at a booth, if someone walks up and they've got that scowl on their face, which is just how they approach everything, and they walk up and they're, you know, kind of incredulous about what you've got going on, and they've been tasting whiskey all day. And then after they sample it, they ask you a few questions and their brow is still furrowed, but then all of a sudden they ask to taste your other products as well. And then they start grabbing your swag. If they start grabbing your swag and throwing that in their bag, you know that, okay, we touched them. We did what we wanted to do. So we got nothing but great feedback on everyone that tasted our stuff. We did a lot of bottle trading. That always happens at these events where, you know, other people who have stuff and they don't want to ship it back home. We don't either. So we had some people saying, hey, we tasted your stuff earlier today or yesterday, and we'd like to take some home. So we're like, okay, well, what do you got? We'll do some bartering. It's legal tender at places like that.
Maybe not legal, but.
Well, okay. It's tender. How about that?
It's bartering with the bard. That's what you're going to call
there
it.
There you go.
Perfect.
Yeah, it was. I will say it was a great way for us to talk to and reach people that we normally don't have time to get to. I mean, we're a long way from New York, so getting on a plane and going and working the market is difficult for us, even though it's very necessary. But we got to see so many people that we would not have gotten to in just a couple of days. So it was a great outreach. If anybody hasn't been to Bar Convent that's thinking about it, I would highly recommend it.
It must be fun to just see people face to face and create and discover these new raving fans in a market where you're still working on developing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you can answer that one.
Well, I'm just when you're a small distillery like us, You know, you always look around going, okay, we're growing and we're growing by leaps and bounds, but still we want to be huge. We want to be everywhere. And you think, well, people just aren't looking for us. They don't know we're here. And then when you actually get it in front of their faces and they're excited about it, you realize, okay, well, the problem isn't the general public or the consumer. It's just us getting in front of them. If we can get in front of them, you know, we get a following real quick because we have good products, good story, good branding, good everything. So yeah, it's exciting when you get in front of people and now you realize, wow, now we at least have one fan in New York City. It's exciting to
I know was you. There. Dawn was there. You had at least two more. Okay.
Okay. So three. We have three now.
And Devin was there.
Yeah, that's right. So there's four. There might be five or six.
By the time we're done this 18-hour podcast, you'll be up to 30,000 fans of New York. And there were only about 800, 900 attendees at Bar Convent. So people were telling people about your whiskey. I mean, here's what's fun. You only brought the bourbon with you, some expressions of bourbon. The people there who have not been to the distillery or have not gotten a chance to enjoy some of the other expressions that you provide, the Muhlenberg line, you know, your cream products, right? So there's a lot of things still discover at the Bard.
Yeah, absolutely. And we didn't want to overwhelm everyone and bring a thousand different products because we have about, what, eight SKUs now. Mm-hmm. So we just concentrated on the cinder and smoke line. But yeah, that was very well received. And we did another thing that we love is when people would taste all those and they say, oh, wow, these are great. But what else do you have? And then we started saying, well, you know, then we started talking about the salted caramel and the orange cream and the apple pie whiskey and the blackberry whiskey. And then just our Muhlenberg, we did bourbon. And they're like, oh, I'd love to try some of that. Like, well, okay, well, here you can order it online. You get it from our website. Yeah, it was exciting. It was really exciting to let people say, okay, here's what we brought and here's what else we've got. So yeah, I think we've received quite a few emails since then of people who attended, quite a few more followers on our website, which we're about to get that newsletter going. So there's a hot break for you. That's on its way.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, Tom, and for both you and Kim, you know, somebody says, hey, I really like your stuff. What else do you have? I mean, wasn't that, and I guess for Dawn and I, we're guilty of the same desire, right? You know, it's almost like dating. You know, can you imagine at some point somebody turns to you and says, well, that was great. I really enjoyed that. What else you got? You know, what is it? Be honest. I mean, it's what is the feeling you have or what are the thoughts that when somebody says, you know, wow, this is great. But what else do you have?
It's...
I like it. I'm grateful.
Yeah. But at the same time, and I am as well, but I also a quick story. Every time we do a product release, we always release it here at the distillery first so that the locals get first dibs at getting the, especially if they're serial numbered bottles or if they're just limited edition, we want to have give the locals first shot at getting their hands on it. So we'll have tons of people coming in here. And it's funny that whenever we're releasing a product that we may have been working on or in development for a year or more, and they walk in and before they've even paid for it, while they're still ringing up the transaction, they say, so what are you coming out with next? Now,
haven't even tasted this one yet.
Exactly. In the moment.
I got my bottle. What's next?
Exactly. Yeah. So in some ways, yes, it's exciting because, you know, they want the next thing we're doing. But it's also a little bit disheartening sometimes because you realize that, wow, the attention span of the population is so short. That, you know, you're like, I put so much work and effort into this. I mean, just dedicated our lives to creating this product, and you're already over it, and you haven't even bought it yet. But again, it's the two sides of the same coin because we're also excited. Going, wow, they're going to love this when they get home. They love the fact that it even exists, and they're already looking forward to the next thing. So it's a catch-22, but it's kind of like a. We have a lot of friends that are musicians, and it's the same way where they release an album that they put their heart and soul into. And when they release that album, everybody's like, oh, that's great. But they listen to it in an hour and then they're like, OK, when's your next album coming out? So, yeah, sometimes it's frustrating. You want people to enjoy it a little bit more. But
I want some sort of developmental rights in whoever records the song. What's next? Because I think this is a great song that can weave its way. Just, you know, it's a ballad, it's a love song, it's a hard rocker, you know, you bring it to different levels. Very similar to the experience of trying your products. So many different experiences that you're going to have on different levels because of what you're producing.
Yeah. Well, I'll pass that along to some friends of mine. And then if they end up writing anything, I will insist that you get some type of a songwriter's royalty.
You know what? I'd be grateful. Thank you.
Okay. I'll do my best.
We'll do a big Fermented Adventure song release party at the distillery. And what's that thing where we all park our RV right there in your parking lot?
Harvest host.
We'll harvest host. Is that still something that you've been developing?
Yeah, we have two that camped with us last night, and they're out there as we speak. So I think they're about to move on out and go on with their adventure. So it's still a cool thing that we're doing.
Well, you are episode 83 of the podcast, and that goes back to March of 2022. Talk about some of the developments at the distillery. You touched on, you know, you're growing by leaps and bounds. You want to grow more. Talk about some of the changes that have happened since we were there over a year ago.
Yeah. So the main projects that we have going on is that we've got a Vendome still that's being constructed right now. And that's been in the works for quite a while. And we're hoping to actually get it this year, get it installed, get it commissioned, and be operating it next year. Because right now we have two small 60-gallon pot stills we've been using since 2019. And with that, I can realistically make, if I'm up here all the time doing nothing but distilling, I can do between 2 and 3 barrels a week. With the new column that we have coming, I can do 20 barrels a day. So we're looking forward to that because we need that. Our supplies, we're in that good problem, right? Where demand is bigger than supply. So our rick house is dwindling in barrels. Mm-hmm. So that still is going to show up just in the right amount of time to start producing what we need to. But that's in the works. So we went from, when you were here, how many employees did we have?
Well, you held several responsibilities both. So it seemed like there was a staff of 40, but I think at the time it was maybe 3.
Okay. So that would have been me, Kim, and Amy. Well, now we have 3 more. So we're up to 6. So we've doubled our workforce, which is
still not enough.
It's still not enough, but my God, it makes a big difference. So that's been probably one of the biggest things. So now, instead of only sleeping a couple hours a night, we can sleep 4, maybe 5. So that's great. It's going in the right direction. But this fall and next year is going to be huge for us because we're going to get a whole lot bigger. We're moving out of the building that we're in now into the main distillery building. So if everything goes like it's supposed to, a year from now, this place will be a completely different experience for people who come here, and you should see us in a lot more markets because we'll be able to supply it.
If you've been here before, come back and see us.
Yeah,
you
please.
Too.
Well, you mentioned Rick House. I mean, that was basically the visitor's locker room or the home locker room.
No, it was the music room.
The music room.
It was the music room. And that's going to be the green room for artists when they're performing here because we're turning this building into our venue. So we're turning that into the green room where they hang out to have some privacy. And I assume it's going to always smell like bourbon. I don't think there's any way to get it out of there now.
That's some of what's really exciting about what you're doing. The weaving of different entertainment opportunities, just personalities, just everything about you at the bar comes out in what you love to do and the relationships that you have. That's what's fun and exciting for people. It's not just going up to a counter at a big spirits bartender convention and, hey, what do you got? What do you pour in? It's once people get to speak with you and talk to you, this personality comes out. And it's almost like everybody leaves having gotten a big hug. but that's your person. That's been my interaction.
Thank you.
You are like, hey, you're lifelong friends that I'm trying to think, when did we meet? Oh, it was 5 minutes ago, but it seems like it was years ago.
Thank you. That's a huge compliment. And we try to make people feel that way when they come to the distillery, even though we're crazy busy all the time. But we did have one of our harvest hoster couples I went out and talked to yesterday outside while they were having a nice little cocktail. And they said, we really enjoyed this today because when we go to the big distilleries, we're just a number. They send us through and we go buy something at the end and we're done. But the craft distillers take time to actually talk to us, spend time with us, get to know us. So we always feel like family when we leave. And that means a lot to us.
Yeah.
Has that been a discussion for you? When we did our tour, you took us through, you showed us, you know, the buildings, and this was, you know, this is the high school. This is all the things that encompass the campus of the school. Your desire is, like, you're putting in this Vendome column steel. You've got grand plans. Is there a conversation to make sure that you have something in place that you're always going to be that craft feel, but get bigger to where you want to be and produce what your fans want to have on hand?
Yeah. And I think part of that, before you answer, mm-hmm. it comes down to how people feel when they walk in your visitor center and your tasting room. If you walk up to them and speak to them and make them feel welcome, spend a couple seconds with them, get to know them, and then let them do the tour, I think it makes all the difference in the world. First impressions.
Yeah, absolutely. And also the way we operate this business, you know, she and I are like everybody else. We've had past lives where we worked for other people, worked for big corporations, or worked in a big machine. And, you know, you spent all that time going, wow, I'm not living my life. I spend most of my time working to make a little bit of money, but I'm making someone else even more. So you weren't living your life. And when we started this business, we basically said, okay, we're just going to live our lives. We want what we enjoy to be part of what we're doing. We just want to act natural, do our thing. And that's why we have that. People notice that with us, that we're not trying to say, oh, come on in, go ahead and hand us your wallet as soon as you walk in the door. You know, they can tell we're not doing that. We're just living our lives and we're inviting you in for it. So we try to just do it that way. And once we get bigger as far as production goes, that doesn't mean that the experience has to change. No. It just means that the amount of work that we do right now, there's more to show for it in the end. That's basically the only difference that we want to make.
I think our passion comes through, which is what we hear a lot, that when people get ready to leave here, they always turn to us and say, we see your vision now and we feel your passion and we can't wait to see what's coming in the future. So that means a lot.
It's wonderful when you can share, feel like you're part of that dream, right? I mean, right. In some way, shape or form, we want to see you achieve your dream. The people out there that love the Bard and love what you're doing, it's really interesting how that becomes so infectious to say, I just want to see you succeed. And that's really what life should be about as a whole. We should all want to see people succeed. Yeah. You know, if you do well, right? If your distillery and you, Tom and Kim, you do well, then more distillers may say, you know what? You inspired us. We've always had this dream. Or somebody's going to say, hey, I just want to expand my knowledge of bourbon whiskey. You've given me that inroad because of your dream and your passion and what you see as this culture. And there's so many ways that people can be, you know, just for what we receive from knowing you as well. And I don't want this to become, you know, oh my God, it's a love fest here. And but when you meet people that you want to see really achieve their dreams, it's so wonderful to just feel like you're a little part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the truth of it is, you know, I think the three of us here talking are aware that anyone who achieves anything, they didn't do it alone. It's impossible. There's a whole team of people, some of which you barely know or have never met. And that's the way achievement is. And we're very much aware of that. We spent most of our lives working in team sports, working in NASCAR. So we understand the team element of anything. And some days we get overwhelmed thinking, wow, this is just us doing all this. It's not true. That's not how it works. So when people get that feeling like, wow, we are a part of this, you actually are. I mean, you're a huge part of it, whether you're just motivating us for a few moments. Maybe that's a few moments we needed that day mm-hmm. for buying our products. Of course, that's huge because that's what actually keeps the lights on.
And thank you.
Yeah, thank everyone for that. Thank you for that. And that's what we want people to understand is that we're not blowing smoke just to make you feel like you're a part of it. You are. You truly are. Because again, we can't do this alone at all.
Well, you're not blowing smoke. You're blowing cinder and smoke.
That's right. Yeah. Perfect.
Okay. Now perfect. That's a perfect segue. You guys have picked up some hardware since we saw you last. Little recognition.
Yeah. We basically all of our products now have won golds, double golds, platinums, or double platinums. So everything we have ever released has got some top honors at some of these awards. And you know, one thing I'll point out at some of these award competitions, we may not be the only gold or platinum, but still, to achieve that means that those tasters who have to be getting sick and tired of tasting spirits after a couple of days of that, I'm surprised they don't give everybody a bronze or a honorable mention just to get them out of there. So whenever we do come out of those competitions with one of the top awards, we're excited because we think, hey, we know we like it, but now someone that we don't even know who they are, they like it too, and they're trying to be very particular. So yeah, we've got tons of awards for all of our products, and we're really excited about that. So we're racking up the hardware, which is fun.
So what are you drinking, Rich?
Well, we're going to go through a couple of expressions today. Your cinder and smoke. Now, the bottle I have is bottle 5, and this is 245 out of 502. But I still have bottle number 1, 277 out of 672. So I was curious to get a sense of any difference in between the first release and now the fifth release of this line.
On the founder? Yeah, yes, they'd be on the founder select. So basically what we try to do is that we do everything we can to get each one similar. But here's the fun thing. We know we can't achieve that because it's such a small batch that you're not going to do it. But the fun part is trying to, when we're doing these batches and getting them together, we want people that if they liked batch 1, they'll like batch 5 and anything in between. But if you really have a clear palate that day, then you will pick up little nuances about it. Because we, even though there's certain elements that we want to have, like you'll find similar noses pretty much on both. The finish should be the same, with just that light smoke that dissipates quickly. But in between, you'll taste a little bit different notes if you have them side by side. But that's the fun part of about the Founder Select. There's only 3 barrels for each one. It's a blind taste testing that Kim and I do. So when we put those together, we know what Cinder and Smoke Founder Select should taste like. But we just say, hey, these 3 really complement each other because of the extra cherry notes or the extra vanilla in this one. This is really unique. So that was a long answer to, if you like one, you should like the other, but will you pick up different notes? Absolutely. That's the beauty of small batch and being a craft spirit.
Pardon the interruption. If you like what you hear, if you love what you're hearing, please share the podcast. Please take a screenshot of the podcast, post it on your social media, tag us, just to let everybody else know about Fermented Adventure, the podcast. We'd be grateful for your help to grow our podcast. I waited until now to do this because I wanted to share this with you. And it's very interesting, the nuances that you do get from 1 to 5. Mm-hmm. And what I enjoy is that you can actually put 2 bottles down and maybe, like you said, do a blind tasting. Mm-hmm. And I think people would say, oh, that's, they're different. They are different. They're similar characteristics as you talk about, but these 2 are very different whiskeys.
Right.
To me, number 1 was had a little thinner mouthfeel, but seemed like it had a higher on the spice aspect, maybe like a little bit more of the burn, but they're both 100 proof.
Yeah.
So but number 5 was more creamy. It was really just a wonderful balance. I think you see the maturation, and it also could be, look, I mean, how long are both of these left in a barrel? You know, how much of that angel share do you lose? You're using still the same mash bill, but what may be transferred into that barrel and in and out of that wood during that time?
Yeah, right. Exactly. And that's
the different age barrels as well.
Yeah, because our Founder Select is anywhere from 4.5-year-old, actually now 5, anywhere from 5-year-old barrels all the way up to 11. And we never know until we go to empty the barrels which ages they are. So because we do it all by taste. But you're exactly right. And that's why single barrel whiskeys and bourbons are so popular, because in theory, there's no other bourbon on the planet exactly like that single barrel. Because, when it comes to a barrel, it's made of all these different staves, and not those staves aren't necessarily from the same tree or from the same soil or the same age or the same state. So you're basically every barrel is unique as far as what it's going to do to the spirit you put in. And of course, every spirit's different that you put in. But what we, and we will have some single barrels coming down the pipe. We can talk about that here in a little bit. But there are some single barrels that we feel, you know what, that's unique by itself. I don't want to touch that. But what we have found is that if we will really taste our inventory, finding three barrels that go together and make something unique is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Blending's a lot of fun. When you take a spirit that is unique by itself, but then say, you know, if it meets this one that's across the rickhouse that it's never met, you know, do they like each other? How do they get along? and it's a lot of fun to do that. It's really neat. But yeah, we want it to where if people like Cinder and Smoke, they will always like the Cinder and Smoke products we put out. But yeah, the small craft and small batch, you always have a little bit of nuance in it.
This number five is very much fruitier than number one. And now I feel jealous of whoever has collected one through where we are today, because you've gotten to see all the different nuances, both delicious, both an experience, both have different characteristics, both very well done. But this is fun. This is like, you know, a little bit of something it's how often do we get a chance to, you know, try that same expression a year later or a year and a half later of what it is. So this is really amazing.
And I like to think that we're getting better at our blending techniques as well. And I always give a shout out to Lisa Wicker. She has been such a great friend to us in the industry and personally. And she basically walked us through our first blending process, and she taught us a lot. And then we continue to learn from her. Mm-hmm. So thanks, Lisa Wicker. Shout out.
Thanks, Lisa Roper Wicker.
That's right.
We can end the podcast here. I'm enjoying these both, but we still have a couple more to try. And this next one, which when I saw this got released on social media, I'm one of those people to go, you know, we're not there. Stop it. You know, you give it out to the locals first and then it goes away. So I'm glad there's still some left. This is the Cinder and Smoke. This isn't the founder select, right? This is batch one, bottle 855.
Yeah.
Now, this is only 94 proof versus 100. So talk about the difference there.
Okay. Basically, this is our what we consider to be the daily drinker for Cinder and Smoke. This one retails for about $60 a bottle as opposed to 100 for the founder select, because we have so much labor and time, especially goes into the founder select. That it has to have a little more price, and also it's our premium barrels. This one, it's 94 proof, which we have found is kind of the standard proof that most people like. So this is kind of the daily drinker for $60 a bottle. You know, you're not breaking the bank. You can kill a bottle, go get another one, you know, not worry about it. The Founder Select, that's more for in my mind, a special occasion type of a bourbon. But this one, it's still small batch, but instead of only three barrels, it's got maybe 6 to 9 barrels in it. So by a lot of standards, that's still extremely small batch. But for us, shoot, that's a big old tank, you know, as far as we're concerned. But what that does is, just like we were talking about how every batch of our Founders Select is a little bit different, this is our foray into making a little bit bigger batches so that we're even more consistent. Because that's how the big guys do it, right? In order to have Maker's Mark that tastes the same today as it did in 1987, you need to have a large inventory to pull from, and you need to know what you're doing. That way, people who like Maker's Mark and don't want it to deviate, they want to be Maker's Mark every time. Mm-hmm. So we're the same way with our Cinder and Smoke. So the one you're trying right now, that's the one that we will continue to grow. And as our inventory gets bigger, we continue to match this flavor profile. And it's kind of an odd way to do it. We released our premium products first and then worked our way down to the daily drinker. But it's worked out very, very well.
Well, that's how we're going to try it today. We went to your Founder Select and now we're just going to your daily drinker. So I wouldn't expect that we would do it any differently than the way you do it.
There you go.
That's right.
what I get on the nose initially when I opened this was I got like a black tea. Mm-hmm. And this is really opening up to where I'm getting notes of honey. It's very, when I say grainy, it's just a very it's very harmonious to where those grains are playing together. Is this the same mash bill as your founders, or does it deviate a little bit?
It's basically the same. All of our cinder and smoke right now came from about five different Western Kentucky distilleries that either we sourced it from them, some of their older inventory of barrels, or stuff that we had a contractor for them to make to our specs. So each one is slightly different but we're talking between, because it's a rye based bourbon. So we're talking anywhere between 24 and 31% rye. So still that in that standard rye bourbon range. But it still comes from the same amount, the same barrels, the same barrel inventory. It's just this one, we find 6 to 9 that go together very well. And this is our way of learning what the big guys know, is that, okay, every time we do a batch, we need 47 barrels from the third floor of this Rick house. We need 278 barrels down here. We've learned over years that that's what makes this product. Well, now we're starting out saying, okay, now we know that if we get 3 barrels from over here, 3 from over here, 2 that came from that distillery, we know that that will make our cinder and smoke 94 proof, standardized. So it's basically what you're watching with us is you're watching us go to school. We are going through the apprenticeship on how to do larger batches.
I love listening to you speak about your process, because we met, and even in the last year, I feel like you both have learned so much. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, it's very humbling if they, some people, I know everything. I got it. I'm dialed in. I don't need to learn anything. But you demonstrate that you're learning so much every day about what you're doing and your craft. And that's why this is getting so much better.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, our experience has always been, both of us went to college for way too long. Both of us had jobs where, you're doing something unique. So what we've learned over time is that basically just busted knuckles and boots on the ground is the only way to learn how to do anything. You can educate yourself. And I do. I'm that way. I'm a geek. I will study, study, study. And then Kim comes along with a blindfold on and says, let's go. she has taught me stop studying so much, because that's not going to get it done. But it helps. It speeds up the process, let's just say, by educating. But there's nothing like doing it. Doing it is what teaches you everything.
I'm hands-on. He is read the book and then,
hands-on.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to preserve my hands. Yeah. But there's a lot that goes into it. And I've also, as far as just trying to learn things, one thing that was told many, many years ago when I was a kid was that if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. And I have lived by that. So whenever I'm in the room, I'm like, okay, I'm not really picking up anything in this group, or the person I'm talking to, or the people, or this, whatever I'm doing. So I'll go find somewhere where I walk in and I'm dumb as a rock. I'm like, perfect. That's where I need to be. It's embarrassing sometimes. Yeah, I feel ridiculous. Sometimes I nod my head and go, I have no idea what they're saying. Don't even know what the words mean. But that's when that's where you need to be, because you're going to pick up something.
That's the way we feel at industry conferences. We walk in and, we learn so much when we go, and we've talked about taking our staff as well. And we'll probably do that maybe next year. Start taking them to some of them, because the learning curve, you walk out and your brain is about to explode, but you get a nugget or 60 nuggets in every conference you go to, and every speaker knows something that you haven't learned yet. Or you may have something to tell them afterwards when you go up and talk to them that they didn't think about, maybe another way to look at it. So there's just learning both ways.
Well, what I'm learning is this is delicious.
Thank you.
I hadn't had this before. And all right, so there's, to me, if you like sweet, this is sweet. If you like spicy, this is spicy. If you like oaky, this is oaky. For the Pennsylvania rye drinker, mm-hmm. this is a perfect whiskey. And I'm curious, because bourbon, and I'm doing air quotes, people don't have that impression of that rye. I mean, they do. There are distilleries making a high rye. Mm-hmm. But I think the impression is, it's going to be high corn. What for that drinker, you kind of have to have that introduction or that conversation about the story. What is that like? And is it something where you're in Kentucky now, where you're trying to reintroduce something that, oh my God, we can drink this too?
Well, the good thing is the industry has a head start on us because the rye, especially the rye based bourbons, have really picked up steam the last, I mean, I'll say 10 years, but they continue to grow. And, you know, 15, 20 years ago, nobody wanted to drink any type of rye because for 100 and something years or more, that's what all whiskeys were. So when they certain distilleries started making a wheated, they're like, oh, this is nice. It really, you know, not only is it the corn provides the sweetness, but man, it's just really sweet. And that was just the taste of the culture for a long time. So now, even though we're introducing people to rye, that's why we have our Centered Smoke, which is rye-based bourbon, our Muhlenberg, which is a wheated-based. That way people come in, and if they don't know anything about bourbon, they at least leave here saying, I think I like wheated better. I think I really like a rye better. So we've had a lot of people that were happy about that mm-hmm. they leave here having learned something, because we give them two completely different offerings. And luckily, most of them say, I like them both, which is great.
A lot of tasters, and I do a lot of tastings here, they'll tell us, I don't like rye bourbon, but they taste ours, and then suddenly they've changed their mind because it's not a high rye, mm-hmm. And it is sweeter. So those people who do like the wheated tend to like our ryes because they're not in your face rye. They're very spicy. They're very flavorful. And, you know, that's just something I really enjoy about our Centered Smoke. There's so many flavors going on. And speaking of flavors, the Oloroso is just so much going on in that bottle. It's my new favorite. And every time we come out with a new one, it's my new favorite, but this one has been my favorite since December.
Well, I just poured this, and when I saw that you had this at Bar Convent, and again, we see you post things on your social media site, and it's almost like, all right, well, I guess, you know, I'm not going with that date to the prom. So I missed that one. So thank you very much. See, I love working in little high school references for you guys.
Yeah,
so,
thank you.
For that. I can't wait for the release of the high school series or the prom series or whatever you do.
Keep on waiting on that.
I'm going to pour us some Oloroso while we talk about
it. Wow. And when we were at the distillery, we saw the casks that you had set up. And Tom, you mentioned something to me about your experience with the casks. Talk about that experience.
Well, it was very interesting. First of all, the casks, they're enormous. They're huge. They're about 130 gallons, I believe. And they're ancient. They're older. They're about the same age as me. They spent 20 years, or I think it's close to 20 years in Spain holding Oloroso Sherry. Then they were shipped to Speyside, where they held Scotch for 19 years. So they were 39 or 40. And then I got a hold of them while they were still wet, and then put our Cinder and Smoke in there and let it sit in there for about a year and a half, 2 years. And what we've learned is that most people, and we didn't even know this, again, another thing we're learning, people are tasting it going, wow, you left it in there for a year and a half too. Most people only let it finish for a few months. Well, I didn't know any better, so I thought it'd get there a while.
A year and a half, yeah.
But we're glad we did, because it came out very, very well. But I had never actually wanted to do any type of barrel finishing, mainly because I thought, you know, maybe it doesn't add as much as I think it does, and it's just gimmicky. Well, we learned that it is not. If you put it in the right cask, and draw the right notes out of that wood. And you're patient with it, which, of course, this whole industry requires that. But I was just amazed at how it came out. So basically, this one appeals to a lot of people, because if you like sherry, there's some in here. If you like wine and not so much bourbon or whiskey, here's a wine that you might like to be able to drink. And if you like bourbon with a little extra something to it, here it is. So it's kind of a Swiss Army knife. I mean, it's I'm really loving how it turned out.
Yeah, I
think that's the personality overall of all your expressions, that you're not just going to get one note. You're going to get several different notes at several different beats, and you're going to the highs and lows. This Oloroso, when I tried it first, and again, you talked about this, you know, we can, you know, you can taste all day, or, you know, when they're doing that judging, at some point your palate has to, you know, kind of go away.
Right.
But this Oloroso is a palate waker upper.
Yes.
Yeah. It really is, because it may not be like anything. If you're doing the Kentucky Trail or the Kentucky Craft Trail, this is going to be unlike most things that you're going to try on the trail. And your mouth is going to go, Wait a second. What was that? This is different. This is wonderful. This is like on the nose. It's bourbon candy. It's sweet. It's got a little bit of, you know, where that higher rye bourbon that you're producing comes out on the nose, but on the mouth, when you said wine, I got that little bit of white. I got more of a white wine finish where in my mouth, in my palate. And you go on this journey. This is so wonderful. So I'm glad that you decided, hey, let's just leave this around for a year and a half. And from that standpoint, you were willing to try another finish to say, all right, let's see how this goes.
Yeah. It was fun to do. Now we were introduced to a few finishes that we hadn't quite talked about while we were up in New York. And that's another beauty of going to those events is, you learn all kinds of things. And a lot of people were asking us about some, other types of barrel finishes. And we heard a few of them enough times that we thought, okay, well, now let's see if we can grab a hold of some of those and try that. Cause apparently it's a thing that people are looking for. I've got some that are still in the barrels right now. I've got some that are in some straight up French oak. I have some that are I have some cindered smoke that's resting in some old Ardbeg casks. So
that'll be interesting.
Well, they've only been in there for about a year, and I took a sample of it the other day, and it is amazing. Just that little element that it adds, and like you're tasting, it doesn't get rid of the cinder and smoke. It's just a cinder and smoke plus this. And that's the neat thing about it. It doesn't kill it. It adds to it.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's a lot of fun to do this barrel finishing.
We're having fun, which is, the old adage, if you can love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. I mean, we work really hard and we go home exhausted, but it's very rewarding.
Yeah.
And we get rewarded every day when our customers come in, our friends come in, our fans come in, and they really enjoy what we do and they thank us for it. So it's really cool.
Well, thank you for taking the time to produce this and sharing this with the world. I know it's whiskey, it's bourbon, but the world wouldn't be as good or as better as it is without this in the world. If you haven't been to the Bard Distillery, this is a stop you want to make no matter whether you're trying to hit all the distilleries on the trail or just one, this is where you want to stop. We talked about, all right, hey, what's next? All right, now I'm going to ask, what's next? What's going on? I mean, you talked about some other finishes. Are there other expressions you're coming out with or any limited releases?
Yeah, we have a very limited release coming out hopefully next month. It's going to be a 17-year cinder and smoke. It was going to be 16, but then we had some issues with our labeling and our design work. So by the time we got it all said and done, I went, holy hell, it's going to be 17. Actually, I checked the dates on the barrels. So it's actually going to be a 17-year bourbon. So, the first product we came out with back in 2019 was a 13-year. Well, this is what we didn't bottle then, and we let it continue to age. And now it's at 17, and it is it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
We've already sent it off to two competitions, and it has a platinum and a...
Well, we want a double platinum at the Ascot Awards and won the category for bourbons over 12 years old. And then we entered, I think, the John Barleycorn Awards and got a double gold with that. We've only entered it in two, and we got top honors at both of those. And we said, okay, stop. That's all we need. We're not going to keep going with that. But it's amazing. There's going to be less than 1,000 bottles. I've kind of calculated what I think is in those barrels because I'm going to be dumping them here in the next few weeks, actually. But from what I think I've got, it's not even going to reach 1,000 barrels. I'm sorry, 1,000 bottles. So it's going to be an extremely limited release.
And I'm reading your mind. Yes, we will save you a bottle.
No. You're not reading. Stop, Kim. You're not reading my mind.
But it's going to be. We expect it to go very, very quickly. It's going to have a premium price tag to it, but because this is the end of it, this is all of it. We don't have any more. We're draining the last of the old stuff that we've got. And as we all know, the old stuff's getting harder to find. But we're excited about that. So that's coming out soon. We are coming out with some other expressions of our Muhlenberg later on this fall. Basically, we're probably finally, after years of people wanting us to do it, we're going to come out with basically a cinnamon whiskey.
Cinnamon-esque.
Cinnamon-esque, we'll call it. because we have our own idea of what we would like for that to be. But the demand is there. So we're going to create that for Muhlenberg. And then we also, if we can line everything up the way we want, later on this fall, we're going to have our first agave spirit that we're going to have on the market. And that's going to be a collaboration between us and a music artist. So that'll be a fun one coming down the pipe.
Wow. That is so cool.
With some fun travel mixed in as well to go and pick the farm and pick all the cool stuff. And
yeah, we plan on going to Mexico and actually teaming up with a producer, a small one down there, and basically getting a direct link to here. And then we, do some different things with it, age it in our barrels to make the Añejo and the Reposado and everything else. So we're looking forward to that. That's going to be a neat experience. And it's not John Prine. We did a project with John Prine last year, though, because that happened after you were here last. So it won't be John. It's another one.
When is the first act booked at the music venue? Do you have a date for when people can expect that?
actually, we do now.
it's not a specific date,
but it looks like in the spring, April or May, we're going to have our first, because we had a benefit concert last year out on our, we have a entertainment deck that we built outside. So we did have a concert for the Muhlenberg Music Mission. We're on the board of that, trying to get the musical heritage back going here in Muhlenberg County and get a lot of instruments in kids' hands and get the music going again around this town. But we had a concert last year that was wonderful. But the first one that we're going to have indoors, which also means that we have moved over to the other building, is looking at April or May of next year. That's when this should be a full-time entertainment venue and hopefully going all the time.
The acoustics.
All right. I think we need to get that into our calendar so we can.
As soon as we have a date marked for it, we will make sure everybody knows.
This is, look, Kim, you were very polite to say we bumped into each other. I mean, you were running, so you almost knocked me over. So when we met at Bar Convent, and I'm sure for you it was very overwhelming getting set up, not knowing what to expect. You know, what's the experience going to be like? And I'm so grateful that I'm like, this is like, wow, the Bard's here. Kim and Tom are here. Oh, cool. This is great. So, I mean, and then at some point you had to have the authorities remove us from your booth. So,
yes.
And, I mean, that was a little embarrassing, but we made amends.
Yeah, we actually just let authority know in general, just Don can stay. But
thank you.
he needs to be removed from the premises.
Yeah, and Shanky's whip across the way, they don't want me there either anymore.
No, but thanks for the hat, though. I've got the hat. I will be wearing that.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate you going over there and
commandeering a hat.
Pillaging that from them.
Yeah.
We pillage. Fermented Adventure, we pillage.
Well, as you should.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time today. All right. This is like an annual thing. We'll check in with the Bard yearly, or we'll do something maybe next spring where we kind of introduce you. But look, and I mean this sincerely, this is a whiskey. This is a bourbon. These are things that you want to try. But just go meet Tom and Kim and the whole staff. And it's like you're hanging out with your Kentucky friends. And that's for newcomers as well as those that are local. So thank you so much. This is a perfect way to start the day. It's 6:30 in the morning here in Pennsylvania, and I'm drinking whiskey.
Hey, that's when you're supposed to start, right?
Hey, that's the Kentucky way.
That's right.
Damn right.
That's how we do it. Thanks. Thank you, Rich. We appreciate the opportunity, and always great to see you.
Yeah.
You as well. Thank you. Cheers. Thanks, I got two glasses. There we go.
Love you, man. Thank you.